And that's Randy Newman and Dixie Flyer. An album called Land of Dreams, which is just filled with his childhood memories. It's a wonderful album, and he's a true American treasure, a great composer, Randy Newman. Like his father, also a great composer. Well, it turns out we can forget about terraforming Mars, and here's why. The red planet lacks a source of carbon dioxide that could transform its thin, cold atmosphere into something resembling conditions on Earth. For decades, on the top of targets for terraforming was Mars. It's relatively close to Earth, and we have reams of research showing that water flowed there in the ancient past. And perhaps the red planet, if it were warm enough, could host life as we know it again. Although there's the ethical problem of potentially wiping out evidence of past life or viability for present life. NASA has deployed a spacecraft called Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution, MAVEN, to watch the atmosphere from above and try to figure out the rate of gas loss. Scientists think that Mars had a thick carbon dioxide atmosphere early in its history that allowed liquid water to exist, but most of the atmosphere was lost to space when the atmosphere thinned, so the theory goes water could no longer flow on the surface, and there isn't a source of CO2 that could replenish the atmosphere. It would take something like 10 million kilometer-sized comets, if they were all made entirely of CO2, to smash into the planet in order for us to ever hope of terraforming the red planet. And of course, this is just not feasible. So back to the old drawing board we go. I want to keep you abreast of many of George Norrie's upcoming live events, and he's got a lot of them, and they're coming fast. So let me just get you up to speed here. We have the Eat and Greet Luncheon series, which is just fantastic. It's at the Great Greek Restaurant in Sherman Oaks. And the next one is coming up May the 17th. So you have lunch with George and the Beverly Hills hit matchmaker Marla Martinson. So you can enjoy a gathering with other like-minded people as you have fun at lunch and meet some of your favorite people in the world of the unknown and curious. Now, tickets are going to go fast. So what you need to do is to reserve a spot, email your name and phone number to lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. Again, email your name and phone number to lunchwithgeorge@gmail.com. You'll get a call back with details. And again, that's part of the Eat and Greet Luncheons series at the Great Greek Restaurant in Sherman Oaks, California, coming up next May 17th, Lunch with George and the Beverly Hills matchmaker, Marla Martinson. I've got a date with Ali Siadatan, and you can come along too, right after this on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Ali Siadatan, documentary filmmaker. ThinkAgainProductions.com is the website, and you can sign up for a newsletter there, and you'll be kept up to date on the release dates for his latest project, which is Goliath Rising, Hybrids, Nephilim, and Titans, and it'll be released in stages. And you can also go there and see a trailer for the doc. ThinkAgainProductions.com. So, Ali, before the break, I was sort of summarizing the modern day alien human abduction phenomena and the hybrid program mirrors what was going on back in the days of Noah, which precipitated the flood, right? Yes, God wanted to chlorinate the gene pool.
Yes, that's an interesting point. When Jesus was asked to talk about his second coming, he said that it would be like the days of Noah, and that was a clue because he always referenced the Old Testament and kind of said, you know, asked us to go look deeper into it by pointing to things. And when you look into the days of Noah, you realize that that was the only time in history where the contamination was massive to the point where apparently one family only was uncontaminated. So it wasn't just about selected Nephilim or selected hybrids in rulership or in specific places. It was about a competing race being created, and we haven't really seen that on that scale, a sudden burgeoning, you know, amount of Nephilim or hybrids until now, where we are documenting this. And so that's interesting. He said it would be like the days of Noah, and we're seeing that. But there's a lot more to it. The days of Noah were also a time where an entire system of rulership was being set up with these guys and their masters. It wasn't just there isn't just, you know, going along contaminating the gene pool and leaving it at that. They were actually, you know, creating a power structure that was a part of it. And there's another prophecy that's interesting. It's in Daniel chapter 2, where there is the statue presented, and we're told that this statue is the imperial power that will rule the earth from the time of Daniel until the time where God sets up this kingdom on the earth. And at the very end of it, in the very last empire, we have this enigmatic sentence where the prophet Daniel says, "And they shall mingle their seed with the seed of man, but it shall not adhere." And you think, well, who's the they? It's the Hebrew, you know, plural pronoun used there. They shall mingle their seed with the seed of man. So, well, who is this they? Where have we seen commingling of seeds? And it's interesting because in the modern-day abduction phenomenon, what we're noticing is that it's not through sexual contact that hybrids are created, but it's literally the commingling of human sperm, human seed, with something else. So it's a very accurate description, the commingling of seeds. And then the next sentence, it says, "And in the days of these kings," after we were presented about this commingling, "and in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed." So there is a relationship between these commingled seeds and the rise of rule and kingship, which then precipitates, you know, the second coming, it seems. You see, at the heart of the story here, it's very important to understand the same way that we're not actually in the universe. Another very important aspect of the story is the identity, who we are and what's happening on the earth. In the biblical narrative, the earth is the birthplace, the incubation chamber, the womb of the immortal children of God who are going to have a role to play at the heart of the cosmic order. And there is something useful for the creation that is being forged and molded on this planet, like seeds that were planted and they're growing. And God has declared that one of the sons of David will form a kingdom that will be an eternal kingdom. And it seems that no matter how deep we go into the prophetic literature, at the very end of it, this particular son of David continues to rule forever and ever and ever. And the angel Gabriel tells Miriam, you know, this Jewish woman, that apparently her son is this one. And this is also something that Peter talks about in Pentecost, you know, the famous
right.
passage where the Holy Spirit comes. So this idea of what's happening on the earth is a very central to the power struggle that is going on a cosmic scale. And the creation of these hybrids is an attempt to create a competing kingdom.
Or was it to contaminate the bloodline even of David in order to forestall or prevent the arrival of the Messiah to begin with? Was this part of the master game plan when the fallen angels were commingling with the daughters of men, that they wanted to contaminate the gene pool, if you will, corrupt the line so that there would be no Messiah the first time around?
Yes, you know, that's true. There's a very interesting parable of Jesus. It's called the wheat and the tares, and Jesus says that God planted his seed in the garden, and while he was sleeping, Satan came and planted his seed in the garden. And so this is interesting, the two seeds, one that comes from God, one that comes from Satan. And when the servants of God said, "Let's go and tear the Satan's seeds out," he said, "They're too intermingled with mine. You would be pulling mine as well." And in Hebrew, tares are actually genetically modified wheat. And so this integration into the human world has many purposes. I think one of the purposes, as you pointed out, may have been very well to destroy the bloodline that led to the Messiah. And beyond that, I think that another purpose is because of who humans are. They are the children of the one who is made in the image of the God of gods. is to essentially incorporate our genetic material into the fabric of their own power system and incorporate us effectively into their world. Because when humanity was cast aside at the Garden of Eden, it seems that Satan was also cast aside, and we and him found ourselves in the same world. He then had dominion over those who were cast out as he was cast out. And so he thought, okay, let me just pour myself into this these guys and complete the integration into my power structure as I continue my ambition forward. So it's more than just the Messianic line. It's about, that's a very important point, of course. It's about the creation of the integration of humanity into his world. And so the story is that, well, God has a plan to call us back to himself. And that's why I think we need a new body, because this body has been contaminated. And that's what the resurrection of Christ, I think, is about. It's about a new body that undoes this contamination. It's the promise of a new body.
Another big difference, Ali, between the modern day alien abduction phenomena and what was going back, going on in the days of Noah and afterwards, because after the flood, there were still, there were giants, right? And we had the God ordering the Israelites to go and smite the Amalekites and the Canaanites. Yes. And
an interesting point. We're going to be really opening that up in Goliath Rising. In UFOs, Angels, and Gods, the idea was, oh, there's a seed of the serpent, and this is going to be something that's going to rise in the future, and he's going to be in enmity with the seed of the woman, which is the Messiah. Now what I've realized is that the seed of the serpent isn't just talking about this guy. It's talking about this contamination throughout the ages of this, satanic bloodline, if you will, into the human world. And what we see is, first of all, the setting up of kings and warriors. For instance, let's look at Gilgamesh. He's a very famous Nephilim king after the flood. He was in the city of Uruk, which is now being excavated. It was kind of like Venice. There was canals. People went around in gondolas. It was a very beautiful place. And Uruk and Gilgamesh was a very wise king who received incredible insight from his fallen angel mother, and who was the queen of heaven, one of the most powerful and influential beings who continues to exercise great power out of the Vatican all the way to this day. And she's been worshipped since the ancient days of Shinar. She's responsible for giving out writing to in the city of Uruk to scribes, and the writing was there to record the codes of civilization, which all of the gods or these fallen angels provide their own codes of civilization as they form and structure human society. So Gilgamesh was one king. Moving forward, we in the passages you talked about, where there's all these Nephilim kings that Abraham fights, and that's mentioned in Genesis, I think it's around Genesis 14 or 15, the wars that Abraham has with these Nephilim kings who have armies and who are in the Middle East. And as Abraham kind of moves into what eventually is going to become Israel, as God reveals that he's going to actually shift his attention from Mesopotamia to this piece of land, the Nephilim follow, and the fallen angels follow. So the focus shifts in that direction, and we see that their entire kingdoms, Nephilim kingdoms, set up all around that land, and they're defeated by Jacob's brother, Edom, and later on, when the Israelites come, they kill these guys, including Og, who was one of the great kings.
And right, and here's another important point I think to make, and this again always confused me as a child, why the God of the Old Testament was ordering the Israelites to commit what sounded like genocide, go into these villages and smite every man, woman, and child. But then, if we understand this in the context of alien human hybrids or fallen angels human hybrids, the Amalekites and the Canaanites, the inhabitants of all of these lands, they weren't human.
That's right. They were these aberrations. They should have never existed. Something was being, it's kind of like, exterminating bugs, so to speak. In the story of, it's interesting, for instance, when, Og, who was this great king of the Nephilim, and he was in Bashan, which is around Mount Hermon, which in the days before the flood, that is where they descended. They descended on Mount Hermon, which is in the north of Israel. And Bashan is just at the foot of Mount Hermon. It was really their stronghold. So even after the flood, they set up around this mountain, which is a symbol of power often in the Bible, mountains are. They set up there, and it's interesting because there's a prophecy about the crucifixion of the Messiah written by David 1,000 years before it happened. And in it, he says, as the Messiah looks down from his cross, he says that he sees the bulls of Bashan surrounding him. And I wonder if there were Nephilim there in Israel at the time of Christ who had infiltrated and who were doing this kind of showdown at high noon, and they were even there around the cross. This is a side point. So there's the king, another king. You have Gilgamesh, you have Og, you have these kings, and then you have the sword of Goliath, who is a kind of a hero, a champion, and he has four brothers. So at this point, we can see they're fully infiltrated into the human world, and they've been hired by the Philistines, who are humans, to shift the power in their direction. Be our champion, fight for us. So they're getting paid, they have human relations. And it's very interesting because Goliath is a descendant of the Nephilim. So now the bloodline has, at this point, been mixing with human bloodlines to the point where the Bible says that Goliath is one of the descendants of the Nephilim. This is now multi-generational in the making. The bloodlines of the humans have been contaminated to the point, as I said, in the new body. It's a massive contamination throughout the ages.
Except
What's
Ali.
interesting about this story is that David is a type of the Messiah, because the Messiah is the son of David and Goliath is a Nephilim, and the battle between David and Goliath is actually a type of the coming battle between the Messiah and the final king of the world's greatest empire, who I believe will be a Nephilim as well.
Interesting. But here's the difference between the alien hybrids today and back then. They were easy to spot back in the days of Noah. They were giants.
Yeah.
Now they look just like us. So Satan has really upped his game, hasn't he?
Yes. The we covered this in our 2006 documentary. We asked the question, why? And so there's a new strategy at hand. And what would happen at this point is these guys were walking around, we could all recognize them. Well, we would just take our frying pans and hit them in the head. We would just all get up and kill them all. There's a lot of us, and we are not weak. In the Bible, the Nephilim always lose. They're killed by Abraham. They're killed by Edom. They're killed by Jacob. They're killed by David. They're killed by the Messiah at his return. They're always on the losing side. And so if they presented themselves to us, we would just like destroy them. In the ancient world, because it was a time where the gods ruled these empires openly, their hybrid offsprings were valued. But since the Holy Spirit was poured out 2,000 years ago and pushed back the reign of these beings, our understanding of reality shifted. And on a massive level, we don't worship the gods anymore. Or we say there's one God or there isn't. And we would now have a different perspective. We wouldn't honor, the Hercules of the world anymore. We would look at them and say, "No, you guys, this is not good." And so they have to be hidden today because our culture is different, the number is different, how we view them is different. We have become very numerous, we are powerful,
Got
and
it. Got to jump in here,
yeah.
Ali. We're going to head into a break. We'll continue this conversation in mere moments. Here's Tom Waits and Cold, Cold Ground on Coast to Coast AM. And that's a little homage to George Knapp's program Sunday night, when he'll take a look at some Wild West heroes and some bad hombres and whatever happened to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. George Norrie is coming to Toronto. This is exciting. At the Metro Convention Center here, not too far from where I'm sitting, that's the Total Health Show. which runs from April 21st to 23rd, but George will land on Saturday, April 22nd, and from noon until 2, he'll be moderating a panel discussion. Again, that's at the Total Health Show at the Metro Convention Center here in Toronto. He's moderating a panel noon to 2 on the 22nd, and then from 6 to 8 p.m., he'll give a presentation on health and the environment, followed by a meet and greet. And for tickets and further info, just go to coasttocoastam.com, coasttocoastam.com, and up in the top menu, you'll find George Norrie's events in the menu. Just click on that. That'll take you right there. You'll find all about the Total Health Show, as well as his other live events that are coming up. All right, back to my conversation with Ali Siadatan, Think Again Productions, as we talk about his latest project, Goliath Rising, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Documentary filmmaker Ali Siadatan stays with us. The project is Goliath Rising, Hybrids, Nephilim, and Titans, and that's going to be released in stages. Go to thinkagainproductions.com, thinkagainproductions.com. You can view the trailer. You can also subscribe to the newsletter, and you'll be kept up to date on the release dates. These will be released on YouTube, correct, Ali?
Yes, and they'll be released on YouTube and eventually on Vimeo, which will be pay-per-view.
All right.
But yes.
Okay, I want to get into we're contrasting or comparing the modern-day UFO alien abduction phenomena, the hybrid program that's going on now, according to the research of Dr. David Jacobs, and as it was in the days of Noah and after. You talk about a fallen angelic power structure. You've been talking about that in ancient times, and many of the ancient civilizations, whether it was Sumeria or others, really were kickstarted by these fallen angelic powers. Talk to me some more about that.
Yes, it is something that was written in the Book of Deuteronomy is kind of the source scripture where we are told that there's a clear division between the nations and, you know, Israel. So it's in Deuteronomy 32, verse 8 and 9, and it says that, I'll read it for you right now, it says, "When the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance, when he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the peoples according to the number of the sons of God," which is the same term used in Genesis as the makers of the Nephilim. So the Most High gave to the nations their inheritance. When he divided mankind, he fixed the borders of the people according to the number of the sons of God. But the Lord's portion is his people, Jacob his allotted heritage. And so what we see is that these guys who want to be worshipped, they present themselves as gods to the people of the ancient world, the way that today they're presenting themselves as aliens, which are modern-day gods. They're putting kind of a secular twist because they're preparing to cast the second coming as an alien invasion and possibly gather the world, because the Bible says that we will go to war against God, and you think, well, that's crazy. How would that happen unless the entire thing is twisted in our perspective, the way that, you know, Satan twisted the mind of Eve and changed her perception in the Garden of Eden. So this is about a reinventing. They're not the gods anymore. They're the aliens. And it's kind of a new mask that they're putting on. And UFOs, angels, and gods kind of covers all of this. There is a power structure that established that's specific. It's not just willy-nilly. As you say, it begins in the land of Shinar. It actually begins specifically in the city of Eridu, the oldest human city. It says that it was in that city that the scepter of Enlil, which is the scepter of rule, was passed down from heaven to earth. And that is when society was reorganized. Instead of being centered around the clan patriarch, it was centered around this one who was the representative of the gods on the earth. So the fallen angels can't rule directly, it seems like. They can't just come out of the woodwork and sit on a throne somewhere. They rule through these agents, to whom they give the scepter of power. And there are specific times in history where these agents are not fully human. They're actually also Nephilim, but they're also sometimes human. So it kind of begins in Mesopotamia, and it moves forward specifically through seven empires. This is really what kind of the Bible flags as the seven empires that is ruled by the dragon. You know, there are seven heads. The dragon has seven heads. These empires are ruled by the chief princes of the fallen angelic structure. They're everywhere. They're all over the world. They're in China, India, the Slavic nations. But these seven seem to be really kind of where the big guys are ruling. And the first one is Egypt. That's where, the children of Israel are slaves. And then we just celebrated the Passover. It's about how they're redeemed out of Egypt through the Passover lamb, who Christians believe is the Messiah, the Lamb of God. It's a symbol for him. And the second empire is Assyria. And that empire, attacks Israel in the north because, there's a division between Israel and these nations and the power structures behind them, according to the Bible. The third empire is Babylon. And it's interesting, with Babylon, we begin to have this revelation of the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, where a statue is given to him in a dream, and through the prophet Daniel, God deciphers the dream for him and explains to all of us that this is in fact a power structure from here onwards until God, establishes the Davidic kingdom on the earth, the Messianic kingdom, the age of peace. And so the first statue then is Babylon, but that's already the third of the empires. And from Babylon, we go into Medo-Persia. So we see that there's a prince of Persia, this angelic power that's behind Persia. And I had a very close-up UFO sighting in Persia where this vessel went into the ground, which was interesting. They went into the ground. It wasn't just flying around. And I thought, oh, how long have these guys been in Persia?
Right. But if I could just back up for a moment, Ali, when you talked about, for example, Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon.
Yes.
And one of the empires.
Yes.
Does that mean that Nebuchadnezzar was the offspring? Was he Nephilim? Was he a descendant of Nephilim?
That's a very interesting question. And that is one of the questions that I am researching for this new documentary. Whether the royal families that govern these empires all the way to the present age are in fact the holders of this bloodline, and is that what the metal is in the statue, the gold, the silver, is this the bloodline that is carrying through? Are they the descendants of the Nephilim like Goliath was? For instance, the story of Alexander the Great, who is the empire that comes after Persia, the Greek Empire. Alexander, even though he was the son of Philip of Macedon, in the stories about Alexander, we are told that actually Zeus fathered him, that he was not the son of Philip, the king of Macedon. And so that's interesting. Once he establishes his empire, he goes and worships Zeus. So this idea that he was the son of Zeus, at the age of 23, he conquers the world and defeats the world's largest empire, Persia, at the age of 23, right? Something, and there's lots of stories of these vessels recorded by these armies at the time of Alexander, for instance. And in many, many of these great wars where the empires shift, remember, it says that God has given these fallen angels not only dominion, but boundaries. And so that's why I think the Persian Empire could never go past, Turkey into the Greek world, and that, the small ragtag team of Greeks could defeat them, is because the boundary of that particular fallen angel stopped there, and then a new empire was created under a new rule. And so was Alexander a Nephilim, or was he a human under fallen angel control? But definitely he was energized and empowered by these guys. And moving forward, yes, there may be a bloodline here that is carrying through these royal dynasties of specifically these empires. From there, we go into, after Greece, we go into Rome. And so the legs of the statue, because it says that the Greek world was the stomach of the statue and the two thighs. And so you have the Turkey going into Europe. That's the northern, that's one leg. And the other leg is going into Africa. So if you kind of come south where Israel is, the land mass that connects Asia to Europe, to Africa, and you go into North Africa, now you have the two legs, and the Greek Empire spreads into both of these legs, including the Persian Empire and the Mesopotamian Empire that were before it, but now extends into both of these legs. And when the Roman world comes, it continues to extend all the way into the North African leg and into the European leg, all the way to England, where, you know, they conquer just
right
before the north.
Okay, that leaves the feet of clay. What's that?
Okay, the feet of clay. So now each feet has five toes. So if you follow the drawing that God has created just on the earth itself, the statue, lay him on the ground and follow his feet, you get now, let's look at the leg that's the European leg, the northern leg. We get to the end where England is in the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire starts to collapse, and out of it comes, first of all, a spiritual dominion out of Rome, out of the Vatican. And then five power structures emerge, which I believe are the five toes. The first one is Charlemagne, the Germanic Empire. Then it's Spain, the Ferdinand and the kings of Spain. And then it's the Louis of France, culminating with Napoleon. That's the third one. And then you have, after Napoleon is defeated in the fields of Waterloo, England rises to power and becomes the fourth toe. And finally, the crown of England is, of course, the District of Columbia. And that's where you see all of these, you know, secret societies, which are kind of have this spiritual stronghold with the Vatican. There's all this, so these great, you know, societies that really choose the District of Columbia as a great power center. It's talked about openly that that's where they're going to plant it, because it is far from, you know, the worries of the world. It's all the way over here. You can really rule like a great eagle the rest of the world. And so this becomes the five toes, I believe. And so it takes, from the 8th century until now, it takes time for these five toes to develop. So if you just kind of follow the statue all the way into the northern leg of Rome, all the way to England, and just say, okay, what came after that? What came out of that Roman? What was the next empire that came out? Well, it was these centers of power. And I think that the head that was wounded was definitely Germany, because, you know, the Soviets came and divided Berlin. And you need Germany reunification. So you've got this. And now what happened to the southern leg, the one that was in North Africa, the one that, you know, once you get to the belly of the beast, of this statue, then it divides into two legs. And one leg goes south into North Africa. What happened in that leg after the Roman Empire began to collapse on that leg? What was the empire that pushed out? Well, there is a spiritual center that was set up, kind of like the Vatican was set up in the West, and then these five scepters of power pushed out of it. In that leg, Mecca was set up, which is another spiritual center. And there, five caliphates pushed out. There was the power of Baghdad first, the caliphate of Baghdad. Then there was Cairo, Damascus, the Ottomans of Turkey, and the power of Iran, which was Islamicized, continued to become one of the powers. And these five powers are all in the territories of older empires that existed in this very statue, the Egyptian, the Assyrian, the Babylonian, the Mesopotamian, the Persian. But this was kind of the new manifestation that pushed out of the eastern leg. It was these power structures that were under this particular spiritual paradigm, the Islamic one, the way that the power structures that pushed out on the other side were under the Vatican's influence and the secret societies.
Okay. Well, let me ask you about in modern day, evidence of modern day fallen angelic.
So where we are now is that it has taken, you know, since the 8th century, it has taken time for these 10 toes to push out. Now they've all pushed out. So what we're seeing now in the statue that goes from basically Iran all the way into the Middle East, all the way into Western Europe to England, and all the way into North Africa, and from England to Washington, this is the statue. Now the entire statue is set up and all the 10 toes have pushed out. And now what we are witnessing is literally what the Bible talks about of the toes kind of duking it out. Three of them are going to be pulled out, and then there's going to be one leader that emerges that, you know, forms a coalition. And obviously the western section, the northern section, is definitely more powerful than the southern section. It's where the industrial knowledge is. It's where the greatest money is. It's where the greatest armies are.
Right.
So right now they're kind of, you know, duking it out. I mean, there's lots of research that also shows there's connections between the secret societies and even the Muslim Brotherhood. For instance, we know that the Mufti of Jerusalem, you know, met with Hitler. And you wonder how honest is this war we're having with these agents in the East. You know, you do hear a lot of support for right-out jihadi groups and terrorist groups by Western power structures, whether it's using the money by buying oil, whether it's giving them equipment, whether it's turning a blind eye.
So let me just move ahead here, Ali, if I could, because
the empire are perhaps not as separate as we think.
Okay.
They're kind of negotiating a final structure that is going to be the one that I think the dragon, you know, will give his power to, because it says the dragon will give him power, his throne, and great authority. So, and that's what's coming once these 10 toes hash it out and agree on how it's going to be set up.
All right, we're going to head into a break here shortly, and after the break, we'll take questions and comments. We'll open up the phone lines. But my big question here is, as we head into end times, how will this massive army of hybrids be utilized? Will there be any non-hybrids left? Let's get that conversation going. Yeah.
That's a good question. I think that once the signal is given, and that is when the dragon gives the power to this guy who is the head of this large coalition of the greatest power center of the world, once this guy receives his power, these guys are allowed to come out of the woodwork, and their first task is going to be to influence the masses to bow down to this guy, to influence the masses to really enjoy the kind of world that these guys are bringing in, because it says that he's going to do miracles. And there's also another guy that comes out of the other empire, the southern one, the Islamic one, and he's going to do miracles. And they're going to make fire come from the sky, and there's going to be lying signs and wonders. Where are they going to do these miracles? Well, they're going to be calling on these, you know, what looks like alien masters. And so the hybrids, I think, for their first role is to influence the world and point the culture that they have now integrated fully. You see it in Hollywood, you see it in the kinds of worldviews that keep being put out, to actually enjoy the world that is being ushered in by these guys. Beyond that, their perspective is that, you know, God will somehow, you know, give the scepter of rule to Satan and to his chosen one, and these hybrids with the abductees will form a new race that will educate the rest of humanity and usher them into kind of Satan's version of what Christians call the millennial kingdom. It's a counterfeit kingdom. It's not the kingdom of David's son, but Goliath's son. And that's why I think that the two, David and Goliath, are kind of the representative of two champions, of two kingdoms, of two power structures. And so this is, it has more than one purpose, the hybrids, but their original purpose will be to influence the world in the direction of this leader and of his masters.
All right, we'll take a time out. Here is Carla Thomas taking us into the break with Baby back on the other side with your questions and comments for Ali Siadatan right here on Coast to Coast AM.